Oh yeah, we're back with another episode of On This Grind, where we talk about life lessons learned from the music business. And this episode is entitled, Your Network is Your Net Worth, which is especially important for me today because I'm about to step on a plane, heading to France, going to meet them. So let's get into it.
I'm on this grind, gotta get my seat. I'm on this grind, yeah. I'm on this grind, working overtime, man. I'm on this grind, come on, yeah. I stay on this grind.
When I first started this On This Grind podcast, I made a little schedule for myself of which episode would come week by week. And I made this episode come at this time. I wanted to record it a few days earlier, but it's been so crazy leading up to leaving. So I kind of feel it fits in the right moment right now because I am on the way to the airport in a few hours. And I wanted to record this before I leave because I know the next week, the next 10 days are going to be really hectic. But I knew that towards the end of this podcast series for the first season, I wanted to talk about the importance of networking. And I think that's been a consistent theme if you've been listening to each episode. And it's also, as we get towards the end of the season, I wanted to have it here because I think it's kind of the essence of everything. It's people are what makes the world go around. People are what makes business go around. And your people, your network is really your most prized possession. So I want to start off this by talking about MeDem as I'm going to MeDem. And I want to talk about my first time. This is going to be my ninth time. I've gone 8 years in a row. So I want to explain how I went the first time, how there was a gap, and why I go every year. So I'm going to start it off by talking about two suitcases. So first time I go to MeDem, it's January 2005. I land in Nice. I get the shuttle bus to Cannes. Everything's smooth. But then I see everybody's at the conference. I'm like, it's Sunday. I thought everybody was going to the conference on Monday. I didn't think it would start till then. So I'm like, let me get to the hotel. I'm going to come right back. My hotel isn't right in Cannes. It's a little bit outside. So now I'm on like a public transportation bus taking me there because I'm not going to get a cab. It's going to cost too much. So I'm on this bus. And maybe I'm a little naive, but I thought the bus driver might speak a little English. Or I thought maybe somebody would kind of help out as they hear me talk, but nobody's helping me out. But he kind of has an idea. I pull out the sheet of where it is and stuff. And about 5 minutes into the ride, he's like, right here, get off. In French, sorte, I don't know. So I'm off the bus now, and I have these two suitcases. One of them has a roller. One of them doesn't. Kind of old school suitcase. I wasn't traveling a lot, so I'm taking my parents' luggage, and it's kind of old school, maybe like 80s, could have been even 70s. And so I'm hoisting one of them up, rolling the other, and the suitcases are so big because one of them is clothes and the other one is just material for this conference. Because in 2005, I wanted to have CDs, I wanted to have DVDs, I wanted to have press kits. I thought these were the key things, and they were the key things to have, but it meant carrying a lot. So now I'm walking down the street talking to people, and again, nobody's speaking English. But eventually I find out where I gotta get to. I check in, freshen up, and now I'm heading in a cab back because I'm like, I don't know how I'm gonna get through with a bus. So as I'm driving, the cab driver speaks English, so that's a relief. But I'm also looking at the meter, and it keeps going up and up. And eventually when I get there, it's 40 euros. And I'm just like, man, what am I doing? I'm a rapper. Why am I going to this music business conference? It's costing me a fortune. And what, it's going to cost me 40 euros to get here? It's going to take me 40 euros to get back? And I'm here for 5 days? Like, that's an unexpected expense. And just the quick math of it, that's an extra $500 Canadian. So already I'm kind of sweating, a little nervous. So I go into this place and immediately it's overwhelming because there's halls and there's booths and there's so much action and activity, and I don't know anyone. But the first person I recognize is Chuck D, Public Enemy, for those who don't know about the legendary Chuck D. And I see him standing by a booth and just talking to people, just kicking it. And I'd met Chuck D a year ago. And I'd followed up with him by email. We talked. We did like a little interview too. So we had kind of a little bit of a relationship where I could say what's up, but I didn't feel it was the right moment. So I just kept on walking around. And I saw the Canada stand at MeDem. most countries will have a stand or a booth. So there's one for Germany, there's one for Sweden, everything. So there's a Canada stand. So I was like, okay, let me come around here. I didn't recognize anybody. Now, I did recognize one guy. There was Kyle Kraft from Battle Axe. And Battle Axe, at the time, was this huge independent label, Swollen Members, about to be Sweatshop. But you know, I was kind of intimidated. I didn't know him, so I didn't know I was going to strike up a conversation. He seemed busy. Fortunately, there was one guy I was looking out for. His name is Nick Nestor, manager of DL Incognito. Also happens to be his brother. I knew he was going to be there, so I'm like, where's this guy? Man, at least I'll know somebody. But I didn't know anyone. However, I did have meetings set up. So over the next few days, I went to meetings with people from Germany, Sweden, Switzerland, the UK. And it became very interesting because when you're an artist and you represent yourself, especially in 2005, this wasn't common. So now I had to kind of pitch myself, sometimes from the third person, and which could be kind of tricky. Sometimes people I'd meet with didn't recognize that I was the same artist, and the language barriers. But it was also very informative because in some of these meetings, I would learn about the marketplace. I would see what the UK was like and how I can market my music by meeting with guys who wanted to put me out there and publicize me and do some public relations. And they're saying, we can connect you with these DJs. So it was opening my mind to those possibilities. But I also just felt like I should be doing more out there. I want to take advantage of this time. So now I'm making elevator pitches. Literally, I'm in the elevator, kicking it with people and kind of coming out of my shell, realizing I had to meet people. But one of the key points of going to meet Dan was hearing Chuck speak. And I followed up with him there. That's when I realized this is my opportunity. So during his talk in this workshop that he was doing, he talked about the future of the music business. And he said how a lot of American rappers, and then he looked at me and he said, North American rappers think that it's all about success in the States and taking over the States and being a big rapper in New York. And what he said was he thinks the future of the music business is about finding your own audience and then capitalizing on it internationally. So he said, back when I started, we didn't have this ability to go to Japan. But now new artists are going to have that ability because of the digital and internet marketplace. And that's something that kind of validated for me at that moment why I took the trip, that I wanted to do that in the future. I wanted to build my brand, my company, so that I could expand and go global. So that felt good to do that. And the other thing was, in a couple of these meetings, I would meet with people that I'd click with. In particular, there's this one woman, Natalie, who I connected with from Germany. And the cool thing about her was, as I'd walk around the conference, sometimes I'd hear, Dwayne, Dio. And I'd look around, I'd see Natalie, and she'd say, come over here, you got to meet this person. And then she'd introduce me to people. So this was a really cool thing. And this is key because I'd see her again, which was 4 years later. 4 years, I'm back in Meet Dam. And first night I'm there, I see Natalie. I'm like, what's up? And there was no Facebook as much. Like, I mean, there was Facebook, but we hadn't really kept in touch that much. But now when I see Natalie, she always connected the hip hop people. So she was like, you got to meet this woman I know from the Netherlands. She's running this hip hop festival out there, New School Rules. And we'd organize these dinners, and I'd go out for this dinner one time, and I'd see this guy, and I heard him talking on the phone about Cardinale. And so I said, hey, what's up, man? And he's like, yeah, I'm trying to get him out to Croatia. So I meet this guy named Fat Philly, who later starts running the festival. So Natalie is the one who initially opened those doors, but I met her just from having that first meeting. So I don't want to get too off track, but I met her from having that first meeting back then. The third thing that came about during this first visit to Meet Dam was meeting this guy on the last day. So you got to understand, I've been there for a week and I thought I was going to land some big deals right off the gates. Like, I was looking for licensing deals. I just found out what licensing was, that this was the buzzword, that you want to sign licensing deals. But I just wanted to have something big happen, and I hadn't seen it happen. So while meeting people was cool, I kind of felt like, I don't know if this was the right move, because, you know, we're thinking like, it had to be about $4,000 I invested in this trip, which wasn't money I really had at that time. But my last meeting was with this guy named Rudy, and he was from the U.S. and in California, and he had a history of setting up U.S. college tours in California. And he just had a great energy about him and loved what I was doing too, checked out my music, listened to it. And the cool thing about that meeting was I left inspired, and that was kind of like, maybe this is the best meeting of the whole trip. And we kept in touch. It never actually happened, but the cool thing was it put, you know, that idea in my mind that I could set up a California tour. It was a college tour, so he said you go perform at lunchtime. So it's not like you have to have a huge name about you, and you go perform at lunch, and then you can go on to the next spot. And again, it was kind of just planting the seed that there's a bigger world out there than what I was experiencing in just Canada and just in Toronto, where I was just kind of frustrated sometimes. So what I learned from that first trip and that first conference, and why I wanted to tell that long story, is that it's not about the direct response. If you go on a conference or to a festival or to a trip and think it's about that quick gain, the quick deal, the quick buck, you're likely to be disappointed. And that's what you have to do, is you have to keep on going to these places. Like I said, you got to go global. You got to sometimes just take the trip. So your network is your net worth. And somebody who taught me this is Ivan Berry, who I've talked about in a previous podcast. And when I met with him, he said how he hadn't missed a meetup in 20 years. How sometimes he's on an island on the beach and he sits with his phone. And I'm like, where's this story going? And then he's like, I go through my phone and I see some friends. And I'm like, oh, I haven't talked to him in a while. Let me give him a call, my boy in Germany. And then he said, that's what I do at MeDem too. It's just a reunion of friends. And that kind of set off a light in my head as far as, yeah, maybe I do need to go back to MeDem. So that's why I took that second trip. So I'd met with Ivan in October 2008, and the next week I bought my ticket to MeDem, bought my registration and purchased the flight and everything. And again, I wanted to say this because I didn't have a grant. Now, eventually I did get the grant. It was my first business travel grant. I was pretty excited about it. But when I booked it, I didn't have a grant. So when you're networking, when you're going on these trips, you can't just rely on the grant. Now, something that Ivan said there was really key to me, because he said about kicking it with his friends, just meeting up with his friends and calling his friends, and that's his network. A few years ago, there was a popular t-shirt that came out in Toronto, might have been other places as well, but it says, I make money, not friends, in big, bold letters. Now, for me, that's the stupidest thing I ever heard. I hate that t-shirt. I would never be caught dead in that t-shirt. I'd prefer to make money with my friends. Now, I get the business aspect of it, and I'm not saying you have to be friends with everybody you do business with. But my experience from going to conferences is sometimes I have people who cold approach me, and they're just like, hey, what's up, man? Hey, how you doing? So I do this, and yo, you interested? It's kind of like that hustle of selling your CD without kind of warming up to somebody. You want to buy a CD? No, man, like I don't. So I find that approach usually doesn't work. So when somebody says I make money, not friends, and they just want to get down to business, I find sometimes they're not really getting down to business. Now, like I said, it can work two ways, because it's like sometimes when you go in the studio. When I go in the studio, sometimes I want to just get down to business. I want to make music. I don't want to just kick in and talk the whole time. But sometimes you go in the studio. I go in there with my man Beach Child. We talk for 5-10 minutes, and then we get down to business. So I think it's important not to just look at people as, you know, objects of like, what can they do for me? You want to know people. And when I read business books, as I look at my little library up here, and I'm looking at some of these business books that I read, and one of my favorite ones is What They Don't Teach You at Harvard Business School by Mark McCormick, one of my favorites of all time, this book. And this is the same thing that's been said in several business books that I've read, where they talk about golf. Now, I know not a lot of young people, not a lot of hip hop people are into golf, but they always use this metaphor of golf for business, because when you take somebody out on the golf course, you can learn a lot about them, whether they have a mulligan, if they want to shoot again, if they move the spot of the ball. Just those different things that they do while they play their game of golf can teach you a lot about how they do business as well. And it's not just the game of golf. You can use this different ways too. It's the way somebody behaves just out in public, when you hang out with them, when you go to a restaurant, how they treat the waiter, how they tip, little things like this that can teach you how you should proceed with business with them. Do you just go for the straight offer and give your best pitch, or do you negotiate? Do they get into the negotiation? Sometimes people want to just negotiate for fun, so you kind of work it. And do you give somebody an earlier deadline because you know this person, so you know they won't deliver at the time you really need it? So these are things that you learn from having them be your friends. Again, it's not being best friends, BFFs with them, but just knowing them a little bit more. And that's why you want to go to these conferences and you want to connect with people. You want to go to networking events so that you can build these relationships to get to know people a little bit more. All right. So I want to get into the part of the podcast where I'm going to kick some game, kick some strategies of what I think you can do to improve your network. And the first tip I have is that it's not the size of the fish. A little fishing analogy for you. I'm not a fisherman. I've never gone fishing, maybe just one time as a kid. But if you go fishing, it's a game of patience. You sit in the boat all day long. Of course you want to catch a big fish, but you got to be patient. You got to take what the water will give you, so to speak. And I think the same thing is true with networking. I learned this from being in a fraternity. My last year of university, I joined this fraternity in downtown Toronto. And when I joined, I know a lot of people said who were joining were like, it's about the connections, man. I'm just trying to make connections because I'm about to graduate. I mean, for me, I was about to graduate. Some people were a little younger. But the thing about connections is it can be interesting how you obtain that connection. So at my fraternity, sometimes there would be events with the elders, some of the people that had been at the frat and had graduated and now were successful businessmen. And I would watch people go talk to them. And they would kind of go with that intent of, I want to introduce myself and, sir, I know who you are in this. And then I'd watch that person kind of just brush them off or just listen to them, you know, and they're like, oh, okay. And they'd move on. Whereas I would often take a different approach. Now, partially, it was because I was shy. I wasn't as extroverted at the time, so I didn't want to just come out and introduce myself. But one of the things I would do is go to like barbecues that we would have, and I often would wear jerseys, especially back in the day. I was always rocking a jersey, and I'd notice that some of these guys would say, oh, so you're a fan of him, eh? Okay, you like that team? And then I say, what's your team? And so we'd start talking about sports. And it's the same thing of what I said about golf, that you can learn a lot about somebody by the sports that they like. So the players that they're interested to. And so we would make that connection. And it doesn't have to be about sports, but you want to make that connection with somebody. And this is why people use that word organic. You want to have that organic connection where it's not forced. It's not about business. It's kind of indirect. And it can be sports. Sometimes it's about family. Sometimes it's about saying, oh, you know what? I got to leave. I got to go pick up my kids. Oh, you got kids? Yeah, you got kids too. And then you start talking or just whatever can happen to make that further connection. And that's why it's not about the quantity. It's about the quality. So it's just like what I said, the size of the fish. Sure, you want that big fish, but I'd rather have a good quality contact than to have 100 business cards in my pocket. Sometimes I see people at conferences, I see their actual stack in their hand because they're going around meeting so many people. And it's kind of superficial because they're just meeting people just to kind of get their card, where you're not always going to follow up with them. So one thing I learned from my man Ammo from Punch Records, who I met at New School Rules a few years ago, where we've connected often during the years, is he said to me, he's like, when I go to a conference, I know I'm not going to meet everybody. I know I'm not going to have a deep conversation with everybody. So I try to make one or two connections per conference. And I was like, wow, that's some game right there. Because now when I go to conference, I try to apply that same thinking. I'm seeing a lot of my friends, so I'm kicking it with them. But if I can make one or two connections, that's how I know that it will be a good conference. So it's not just about having the business cards in my pocket. And so it goes back to what I'm saying is that when you're meeting with these people and you have that organic connection, you're not saying to them, what do you do? What can you do for me? Oftentimes at the end, when I would have these conversations about sports or about family or about life, or about anything, about the city, about the weather even, they would say to me, so what's your name? So what are you into? And that's kind of what you always want, is somebody to ask you, because now they're actually going to care about it, because they realize you're not just taking, you're not just trying to get them for something. And that's how you make that solid connection. Which brings me to my next point, which is style and how you have to be conscious of your style. When I went to conferences, when I went to events for networking at first, I thought it was all about dressing up. I thought it was about a suit or a blazer or dress pants, things like that. And sometimes it can be. You want to be conscious of what the event is going to be like. But when I went to MeDem, I was surprised to see that most people were dressed down, that a lot of guys were just in their jeans, t-shirt, and some of the most successful people were in jeans and t-shirt. So why would I have to wear a suit? No, it wasn't about that. So what I realized, just like I said with wearing the jerseys, is that my style could make a statement, that wearing a jersey would lead to a conversation. And I've taken this a step further, because in the last few years, I started wearing a lot of sports hats, a lot of baseball caps. And whenever I travel, I'm very selective about what kind of hat I'm going to wear. My favorite football team is the Pittsburgh Steelers. But I don't always wear a Steelers cap. Now, sometimes I do, because, oh, you're a Steelers fan, or are you from Pittsburgh? Because I'm not from Pittsburgh, but at least we could talk about Steelers. But I will often wear a Toronto Blue Jays hat, or something that is Toronto, or something that is Canadian, because right away that's going to signal to somebody that I'm Canadian. There's not too many people from the States or other places that are going to wear a Blue Jays hat. And that's a key thing as well, because a lot of people assume that I am from the States when I travel. So having that Canadian badge kind of makes me stick out. But it also, again, leads to that random conversation that a lot of the times I just strike up a conversation just based on the fact that I'm wearing this Canadian gear. So now we start talking about Canada. Maybe we start talking about Trump. Maybe I start talking about Trudeau. And then we can start talking about business. So it doesn't have to be hats. It doesn't have to be jerseys. But be conscious of your style. And not, you don't have to try to stick out. But I think that your t-shirts or your shirts, your clothing should make a statement about who you are. And if you can make it a talking point, well, even better. When you go to these conferences, when you go to a networking event and you want to make some connections, it's always great to do. I purposely left this from not the first point, but it's great to do research, which is something I say every episode. But I wanted to leave this one. This is like the third point I'm making. So you want to do some research on the people that are attending, which you can usually do at a conference by going to the website, seeing who the speakers are, checking out their website, getting a little bit of background knowledge. Always a good thing. A lot of times at a conference, you can do something called speed dating. Sign up for it, or sometimes it's on a first come, first serve basis. And you can go and spend 5 minutes talking to each person. And in that 5 minutes, again, it's not about trying to impress the person of saying, I do this, 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 and this, this. Sometimes I just shoot the breeze, man, because I recognize that they're meeting 10, 15 people, and I would rather have a one moment where there's one connection as opposed to just overwhelming somebody. The other thing about making more connections is don't be afraid don't be afraid to go introduce yourself. And sometimes I'll just go introduce myself knowing that I don't really have anything to say. Telling them about myself, it's not going to do a lot in this certain spot. I know they're probably busy, but I'm just going to say what's up and see where the conversation takes me. And at least it kind of puts my face and my name in their head, which down the road, maybe somebody else will introduce me to them and they'll be like, you look familiar. So sometimes you just want to stick your head out and just say, hey, I just wanted to say what's up. I know who you are. I'm a fan of what you do. Keep it moving. So to wrap up about networking, the last point I wanted to make was about investing in your relationships. And like I said, it's great to make friends. It's great to make connections. But to have that connection to really be valuable, you want to invest in it. And so for me, this can mean taking a trip. Sometimes I'll just take a trip. There's not a conference, but I'll go visit somebody. And it doesn't have to be that far. Sometimes it could be just driving an hour. It could be just calling up a friend and saying, hey, we haven't connected for a while. We should go out for lunch. But yeah, sometimes I get on a plane and I fly out to Europe just to go kick it with some of my connections because I recognize that I need to invest in my relationships. Another thing that you can do, and this comes from our man, Jason Gaynard, who I've talked about a few times, who runs a podcast called Mastermind Talks, is the biggest fan theory, which is to be the biggest fan of your network. And as an artist, this is very easy to do. So if you see your friend who's an artist release an album, share it on Facebook, buy it on iTunes, and here's the game as well. Leave a comment. It's a very powerful thing that when you leave a comment on somebody's iTunes page, or if you just even make an annotation on their SoundCloud, these little things kind of stick out because when I notice people do that for me, I'm like, I really appreciate that. And those things are really valuable, especially in today's medium where things are gone here today and gone tomorrow. And these couple of ideas of investing in your relationships and being the biggest fan kind of go back to another theme of this podcast, which is don't take. And so you don't want to always hit up people wanting things. You don't want to always hit up your contacts saying you need this, or can I get this, or can you do this for me? And I see this so many times. I have people hitting me up saying, can you do this? Can you do this? Can you do this? And, you know, I like to think of myself as a nice guy. I do things for people. But then I started saying to myself, has this person ever hit me up and said, hey, D, I got this for you? And it doesn't have to be anything big. But I appreciate when people do hit me up and say, hey, I can do this. Or just as simple as I said, that SoundCloud annotation, which doesn't cost any money, that share on Facebook. Those things have a valuable currency that don't have to be money wise. So you don't have to spend money to do that. And like I said, this is the wrap up. But I think the last thing I'll say about that before I go pack up my last few things is that when you build your network, there's a lot of dominoes involved. So you can't just think about the present. You have to think about the future, where these relationships will take you. I'm blessed to have those friends of people like Henka from New School Rules, who I met originally at MeDem, followed up with, went to the conference and was instrumental in really setting up a Canadian Blast, which led to more Canadian acts coming that first year, more the second, and then it kind of exploded the third time we did it. And a lot of those acts from Canada, that was their first time in Europe. They made a lot more relationships based on it, but it started with that seed. It started just organically, and those dominoes started to fall, and kind of just that momentum of when those first few dominoes go, it keeps on going. So it builds up. It's the snowball effect, I should say. So when you're connecting with people, build with them, because you never know what's going to happen in the future. All right. So thank you for listening to this one. I'm going to say there's going to be a couple week break between the last two episodes. I've got a Episode 9 is going to be about one-hit wonders. And then the last episode, I'm not sure what it's going to be about. So I'm taking some suggestions. I want to hear back from people who have been listening to the podcast. And I really appreciate the people who've been reaching out and saying, like, D, I've been digging the podcast. I've been checking for it. And it's been cool to hear from some of my friends. It's been cool to hear from, like, people that I haven't talked to in a long time, acquaintances in a way in the music game that have hit me up and saying they're checking out the podcast. And big up to my people listening worldwide, too. I know my man Diz has been putting it out there for my people in Taiwan who've been bumping it as well. So I appreciate that people have been digging it. And it's been a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to season 2 in the future. But until the next time, stay on this grind.